Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, through his own admission, I have an author with a checkered past that includes, in no particular order, med school dropout, bookseller, ranch hand, drapery hanger, party photographer, hospital orderly, shoe salesman, and tuxedo rental clerk. He is Roger Johns. Roger is the author of the Wallace Hartman Mysteries. He is also a retired college professor and former corporate lawyer with law degrees from LSU and Boston University. He was born and grew up in Louisiana, and even though he has lived away from time to time, he has spent most of his life in the Deep South. He and his wife have lived in the Georgia area for the past 13 years. He is a member of the Atlanta Writers Club, Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, and International Thrillers Writers. And along with four other crime fiction authors, he co-authors the Murder Books blog. His debut novel, Dark River Rising, published by St. Martin's Press Minotaur Books this past August, is the first in the Wallace Hartman mystery series. The second in the series, River of Secrets, will be out on August 28th of 2018. The stories are set in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and feature female homicide detective Wallace Hartman. And I'm dying, no pun intended, to find out more. So welcome to the network, Roger.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Pat.
Oh, I'm happy to have you, too, because I love your checkered past. Med school dropout, bookseller, ranch hand, drapery hanger, party photographer, hospital orderly, shoe salesman, and a tuxedo rental clerk. Did any of that lend itself useful to you as a writer?
At some point, all of it enters the picture, not directly, because I don't base any of my characters on actual people. But I'm more of a collector, so as I've gone through all of these weird little careers and jobs, I've paid attention to the people around me and just sort of picked up things and stored them away in a tomorrow file, so to speak, and they just come in handy. I've been able to cobble together my characters out of loose parts, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I think I was attracted to it because I guess I have a rather checkered past with some crazy things that I've done. And yeah, obviously that all makes who you are today. And so as you write, I think that kind of bleeds in and bleeds through. So what drew you to writing and then why mystery?
Writing just as a part of life has been with me forever. I learned to read as a really young kid. And I never stopped, and I always thought about what I was reading, and I was always trying to write something, even as a little kid, and that was encouraged in the household. I sort of took swipes at it from time to time over the years, but never really got serious. I wrote in law school. We had an annual faculty roast, and I wrote that my senior year. I was the editor of my high school literary magazine when I was a senior, and there's just sort of been something about that has always drawn me. So I've lost track of exactly when it started, but I've never really stopped. Years ago, I read something from, he was the head of the New York Public Library, and he was a writer. I can't remember the man's name, but someone said, well, why do you write? He said, so I can find out what I know. And it just turns out that that's just such a true observation, because you get down to the keyboard and you have these ideas and you find out, well, they may work, they may not work, or something else just sort of surfaces in your mind that you didn't know was there that you can make use of. It's just it's a great process of discovery, and I'm just sort of addicted to it.
Mm.
As to the second part of your question, why mysteries, that was where it all started for me. I know that my earliest books must have been the grade school readers, the Dick and Jane sort of thing, or maybe even stuff earlier than that. But the ones that I can remember the most clearly were mysteries, the Bobbsey Twins, Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys, those sorts of things, the Alfred Hitchcock mysteries for kids, and any of the adult mysteries that I could sneak out of my parents' bookshelf without getting caught. That was the thing that that pulled me in and has held me in, and that's generally what dominates my nightstand, so to speak.
I'm always interested to find out people's backgrounds and why they write what they do. So I get that being a big reader, it kind of leads you to writing eventually. Well, now give us just a synopsis of your debut novel. It's titled Dark River Rising. And then later we'll study your main character and her relationships, because I know that you believe that is what makes your books distinctive. But just give us a little peek into Dark River Rising.
It's set in South Louisiana in Baton Rouge, which is the capital city. And it is a police procedural, and it revolves around Wallace Hartman, the homicide detective, who is the primary crime fighter in the book. It opens on a very horrific murder, and it turns out that the why of the crime and its implications is as or maybe more important than who actually did this. Obviously, she will need to find out both, and she'll need to stop the killer. She forms an uneasy alliance with a federal investigator who has his own interest in the crime. And together, they ferret out this individual and discover an agenda that neither of them saw coming. In fact, they had developed several theories of what was going on, and they were completely surprised by this. And it takes them in a direction that they had not intended. And when it looks like they're getting too much in the way of this particular criminal, he turns his attention to them. And the book gets very dark from that point. I don't want to paint it as an unduly dark story. There are dark parts of it, but there's some lighthearted moments and some tender moments in it as well.
You just have to read it and find out. Now, why did you choose Baton Rouge? There's a definite reason, yes?
There is. So much of the time, Louisiana is depicted either through the lens of New Orleans or through the lens of Cajun country. And they're both wonderful, very well-known, very popular aspects of the state, but there's much more to it than that. And Baton Rouge is a city with its own personality. It's the state capital, so there's a lot of politics going on there. It's also the home of LSU, which is a major sports university, in addition to being a fine university academically as well. But it attracts a lot of heat for both of those reasons. And I lived there for 10 years after I moved away from home after I finished high school. And I had some very intense early work experiences there. College was, for this Catholic kid who had grown up in a very straight-laced household, college was just an amazing experience. I didn't realize anything like that happened in the world. So it was quite a bit of fun. I learned a few things along the way. And law school itself was, again, another intense experience. And all of this changed me. It changed me in a way that had not happened before. And even though I've done a lot of interesting things since then, I have not been similarly affected once those 10 years were up. And it made such a profound impact on me that when it came time to write the story, that's where it set itself. Everything in the book was the subject of some level of conscious debate at one point or another, except that. The story just set itself there and stayed there, and I never thought about it. And it turned out it's a good place to have the kind of stories that I write, because there are some intense parts of the city, some very dangerous parts of the city, some very wonderful parts of the city. And, of course, the people there are just absolutely fabulous. You will find some of the most interesting, intelligent, engaging people you will ever run across, and you'll find some of the worst as well. Mm-hmm. And I've been a lot of places and done a lot of things and met a lot of those people.
And so then where did the idea for this book come from? From those experiences?
No. Oddly enough, it was just something that leapt out of the ether. I was still in the midst of my college teaching career, and I was teaching a class on international business transactions, the ultra-exciting world of international business transactions law. And I was walking to class one day, and for no reason I can remember, and I've thought about it many times, the question popped into my head, why do the cocaine cartels engage in a certain business practice? Why do they do their business a certain way when it would be so much easier if they just did it this other way? And I know these are smart people, and they obviously had a very good reason for doing it the way they do. So I did a little research and found out exactly what the problem with my idea was, and then it struck the what-if question. Well, what if they could do it this other way? And I can't tell you, I'm being cagey with it because that would give away a big piece of the book, which I don't want to do. But suffice it to say that this what-if question just would not shut up. And it rattled around in my head for a couple of years, and at one point I thought, well, you know, that might be a really good idea for a book. And it turned out that it was.
Yeah, we don't want any spoilers. Your main character, let's just talk about her name, Wallace Hartman. At first you would think that might be a man. How did you come up with the name?
Well, at first it was a man. I wrote the book, and the lead character was named Wallace Hartman, and it was a male detective. And for some reason, the story just would not go. I just kept hanging up. And I tried changing his occupation, making him a private investigator instead of police. I tried to make him some operative from some shadowy government enterprise. And none of it was working. And then just one day, as I was wrestling with this thing, trying to get it past page 70, this question popped into my head, and it was just that tiny voice that comes every now and then, the thing that you need to do, why don't you audition a woman for the job? Okay, I could do that. I can audition a woman for the job. I don't know if I can actually write that point of view, but I can certainly try it out. And I did, and it worked. But I liked the name so much at the time that I said, well, why not keep it? So Wallace became a woman.
Mm-hmm. I actually love that. It kind of forced you to maybe jump out of your comfort zone a little bit. And it's interesting where that voice came from to say, you know, let's try a woman. But it's pretty cool that you actually did that. So how was it to write from that woman's point of view or the woman's perspective?
It was terrifying. I had really no idea how to make that authentic. I knew I could eventually figure out how to write the story. But to make the character work, I needed a lot of professional help. I turned to my wife, and she was very helpful. I joined a critique group that was all women, except for me. And it was about a year before I started getting clean copy back from the group. And it was embarrassing. You would think a man who had been on the charts as long as I have would have figured out a thing or two. Apparently, I had not been paying attention. I'd learned nothing. And they schooled me very intensely. And somehow we've managed to stay friends through all of this.
I think this is one of the best stories I've heard. I actually love that. I think that's so brave of you. And wow, I mean, think of how much you learned doing research for your character.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Wallace and her relationships, because as you say, and I mentioned before, that you believe that that's what makes your books distinctive. What do you mean by that?
I have consciously modeled my writing style on another Atlanta area writer who is a multi-million copy international bestseller. I figure, you know, find out what she's doing and do it, and maybe lightning will strike for me as well. Her name is Karen Slaughter, and she writes very intense, very grim stories in which there is a main character or two. And they are in this web of relationships. And it's this web of relationships that drives the story. And I like the way that works because so many times I'll start reading a book and I just don't care about the people. And I don't care about the people that they're connected to. And the book gets set down and it never gets picked back up again. Other times I will read a book and the writing might be just okay. But I'm so attracted to the people and the people they're connected to and the relationships they find themselves in that I can't put the darn thing down. So I thought, well, this must be the way to do whatever it is that I want to do. So I decided I was going to do that, and I was going to make everything count and everybody count. So I put Wallace in this job and constructed her relationships in such a way that even in her professional relationship, there's a bit of the personal as well. There's a bit in the book where she is encountering her first partner when she became homicide detective. And this guy took her under his wing. He picked her out of a group as the one that he wanted to be the partner with. And they developed a very close working relationship, the kind of thing where you just can't help but be personally attached to one another. There was no romantic interaction between the two, but they became so close to one another that when he had to leave because of the illness, it affected her. And she's having trouble letting go of him, and he's having trouble letting go of her. It's the same with her boss. There's a bit of the personal mixed in with the professional. And I just find that such a realistic and attractive way to create a world where everybody's connected in the book in the same way that people are connected to each other in real life. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to spend a career around somebody and not have your life and their life bleed into the picture at some point. And I wanted to make use of that. And that's what I've done. And I've given her tight relationships with her mother, with her former partner, with this federal investigator who comes into the picture, with the man that she works for, and with a few other people in the book. I don't want to overload it with that, but it's her story. And she is having to deal with these terrible things that happen in the criminal world that she works in. And I wanted her to have that sort of web of circumstance and web of relationships to be the thing that drives her and her story.
And you said something very important, that you were making it real, as in real life. And I think that's what draws you so much to a character, to the point that when you're done reading the book, you could be off doing something else. You could even be at the grocery store, at the bank, and you're still thinking about that person as if you actually knew him or her. So, I mean, think that's the hallmark of great writing and a great character.
Thank you. And that's exactly my goal, is I think about her constantly. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm not thinking about the books about her that I'm writing, she's rarely far from my thoughts because I want to keep up with her. Mm-hmm. And I hope my readers feel the same way.
No, I get that. I think that's an important aspect because, as you mentioned before, if you don't feel connected to the character, you don't really care about the character or his or her relationships. You said it. You put the book down. You just can't go any further with it.
Well, that's my belief, and it seems to work for me. It certainly works for Karen Slaughter, who doesn't know that I'm basically stalking her career as a pathway to my own writing career. I've met the woman, and she's just absolutely wonderful and charming and extremely entertaining, and not anyone you would suspect of writing such tough, violent tales, but there you have it. So I figure if it works for her, it'll work for somebody else.
Absolutely. Very smart of you to do that instead of reinvent the wheel. Find something that makes sense to you and try to emulate that. So let's talk about your pre-character work. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of thought that goes into writing your characters. So how much work goes in ahead of time? Do you have everything on a spreadsheet where you know exactly not only what they look like, but what's in their refrigerator, their bedroom floor, and their garbage can? Or does your character evolve?
That's a good question, and it's one that I wrestle with. It turns out in this first book, there's very little physical description of my main character. And I did that intentionally in the beginning, because I gave the first 50 or 100 pages to my wife, and she read it, and I said, so what do you think Wallace looks like? Because I hadn't put much in there other than him. And she said, she looks like me. And I thought, perfect, that's great. I wasn't expecting that answer, but I thought, I'm going to leave it like that, because if my wife puts herself in the place of the character and identifies with her that strongly, then other readers will do the same thing. So I'm just going to leave her a bit of a cipher in that regard. You find out that she has a couple of cats. You find out that she lives in a very interesting part of town and that she has dark hair. But real, and that sometimes when people look at her, they might look twice. But that's really all that I give you about her. And when it comes to the story itself, I tried to plot it all out. I did so many things. Some of them were absolutely embarrassed. I read these books, you have to start with an outline. So I did. And it was the grade school style outline with the Roman numerals and the capital letters. Well, you can imagine that was just slamming the lid down on anything creative.
Exactly.
And I just got stuck with that. And but there you have it. I did it. It's embarrassing, but I did it. And eventually I got everything down on note cards, and I was shuffling them like crazy. I was pinning them up every which way on these project boards, and just nothing was happening. And then one day I just said, forget about that. Just start in this place where you think the story is going to start, and just let her rip. And I did. And I ended up using a lot of the stuff, nothing from the Roman numeral capital letter outline. That is long gone into oblivion. But some of those note card scenes I did end up using, although they changed a bit. So I have an idea of the kind of story I want to tell, but I'm not one of these writers who can see it from beginning to end with all the nuances and twists and turns.
Right.
There's a very strong process of discovery for me, although I do know who did it, and I do know a fair amount about what it is that is going to spring the lock open for Wallace, so to speak.
I've talked with so many authors, and it is an organic process where the characters just kind of take off on their own, and you're basically following them around and writing around where they want to go and where they want to be. So it's a very unusual process.
It is, and it's something that you have to learn to trust. Mm-hmm. I had two very straight-laced occupations that dominated my professional life, lawyer and college professor. And there's no wandering off into the weeds in either one of those. Those are very highly linear, highly focused, get down to the facts and nothing but facts kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to learn to trust that impulse of something will happen. You just need to pay attention, and make sure that you're paying attention when it does happen. These things have a way of working themselves out. That was not easy. That and writing from a female perspective have been the two biggest challenges for me in doing this.
Interesting. And so as we're having this conversation, I'm imagining that you have actually learned quite a bit about yourself. You even mentioned that the art of writing is to learn what you don't know or find out what you don't know. So if I asked you that question, what have you learned about yourself as you write? Do you have something in mind?
Well, the first thing I learned was that I was not trustful of my own creative instinct. I was a little bit afraid. And that leap of faith was hard for me to make. But I learned that, if you have the right support system around you, that a lot of that fear can be managed. I have been very lucky a number of times in my life, and the luckiest thing that ever happened to me was that my path crossed with that of the woman that is now my wife and has been for 18 years, and we've been together for several years longer than that. And it just turned out to be one of those relationships where we are devoted fans of each other, in addition to all the other stuff that goes into a relationship. And it makes it easier to lean back on something that may be a little bit iffy and may be a little bit frightening, because you know that there's going to be somebody there who is not going to judge you and who's going to catch you. If this whole writing thing fell apart tomorrow, it wouldn't matter to her. She wouldn't care. She's just tickled pink that it's working out, and she'd be exactly the same if it didn't. And there's certainly something liberating about it.
I love, that's the best answer I've ever heard. I love it.
Thank you.
You gave me goosebumps. It's so important to have somebody You know, you don't need a large group of people, but just that one person, as you say, that's a devoted fan. And I'm glad that I asked that question. So what are your hopes then for your readers as you're writing? Are you thinking about readers?
I think about readers all the time because that's where it all started for me, is the reader experience. And I'm not the first to make this observation that you make these black marks on a page and someone else looks at the black marks. And their mind goes to the same place that your mind was when you made the black marks. That's the magic that the writer does and that the reader experiences. And I am constantly thinking about that. Someone once asked me, what are your greatest fears as a writer? And they both are centered around that I might make a plot mistake and derail the reader's experience, or that I might not sell enough books because I'm not entertaining readers enough. And for me, that's the real goal, is to entertain the reader. I bring in things that are hard to think about and hard to deal with at times, and they might be challenging for a reader, but I'm not preaching to anybody, and I certainly don't want to do anything like that, but I do want to make it feel like a real experience, but one that is enjoyable enough that they'll want to come back and spend some time in this place with these people again.
Right. And to help them come back with these people, you've got another book coming out in 2018 titled River of Secrets. Can you give us a little teaser on that?
I can. It, too, is set in Baton Rouge. All of these books will be set in Baton Rouge. It's the second in the Wall Apartment series. And in this case, there's a politician, a state legislator, who has been murdered. And he is famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, for changing his stance on hot-button issues. And he turns up dead one day. And it turns out that there's more than one or two people who might have a really good motive for putting this guy in the ground. And that's the puzzle that Wallace faces, is why was this man killed? And how is it that certain things that I've been trying to keep under wraps in this investigation seem to be leaking out? And why is my investigation starting to feel like it's being sabotaged from the very worst place it possibly could be, which is her own department? So she's battling the crime. She's battling the criminal. And she is not certain, but it seems almost the case that she's battling her own people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so you're in the midst of working on that right now, yes?
I am. It has been through one set of edits with my publisher, with April Osborne, who is the editor that handles my book. And it will go through a few more, including the technical edits. And I'm writing a third. Even though I have no contract for a third book, I'm writing a third book about Wallace, and I'm writing a fourth book at the same time that has nothing to do with Wallace. It's just a standalone crime film.
Excellent. All right. So you are a busy man. Well, we talked about quite a bit today, didn't we?
We did.
We did. But is there anything we missed that you want to bring up before we begin to wrap up?
Again, thank you for having me on the show. I am just absolutely tickled that I got a chance to talk about my book and talk about my character. It has been such a pleasure. I might add one thing to your question about the readers, and that is hearing from readers. Mm-hmm. This is a new experience for me, but once or twice a week, an email comes in through my website from someone telling me that they enjoyed the book. Mm-hmm. It's just an absolutely stunning experience for someone to take the time to do that. And it has frankly made me just a little bit ashamed that over the years I have not done that myself.
Oh.
It takes so little time, mm-hmm. and it turns out to mean so much. I'm making a New Year's resolution 2 weeks early that I'm going to be doing that next year. for all the good books that I read, I'm going to speak up about them.
Oh, I like this. And I hope everyone listening makes that same resolution, because you're right. It's a very humbling experience to get a random out of the blue comment about your book. And then you think, gee, I've never done that for anyone else. So,
yeah,
thanks for bringing that up. I love you. This is, we've learned a lot today. Well, where can folks then go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book?
Well, the books can be purchased anywhere. St. Martin's has the books in all the major bookstore chains, all the independent stores, and if they're not actually on the shelf, they can be ordered from there. They can be ordered through all the online retailers. They can go to my website, which is www.rogerjohnbooks.com, and there are click-to-buy buttons from most of the major brick-and-mortar and online retailers there. They can also find me on the Murder Books blog that I co-author with several other crime fiction writers, and that's at murder-books.com. And there's stuff about me and stuff about my books in both places.
Right. Excellent. So we've been talking with Roger Johns, his debut novel, Dark River Rising, and the new one coming up in August of 2018, River of Secrets. Website is rogerjohnsbooks.com, or his murder blog is murder-books.com, and you're on Twitter, and folks can find you, rogerjohnsbooks.com. Roger, what a pleasure to have this conversation today. I was so looking forward to it, and you did not disappoint, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. I've enjoyed it. I've had a great time today.